Yes, it is. I have a question about your neurobiological model with the dopamine neurons.
Mm-hmm.
Could you speak a little bit to how delayed response and the reward may affect that system?
Elaborate on that for a second, because I want to know how deep you want me to dig down.
As deeply as you are interested in doing.
That's not a good answer. We're here till tomorrow. That's okay. Not a good idea.
But I was thinking that there is a difference between, say, people's financial activity over many years or investments and getting an immediate juice response. And I was wondering how the neurons may be different depending on those choices.
Oh, man, this is like such a softball question. So I should tell you, my lab is the sort of leading lab in the world for studying this thing called intertemporal choice in the brain. And so this is the here's a question. Which would you rather have, $20 now or $40 in 2 months? Well, what is the answer to this one? Okay, but you're unusual. When you ask that question of NYU undergraduates, that particular number they have to think about. If you offer them $35, nah, I'll take the 20 now. If you offer them 50, yeah, they'll wait for that. It depends on the undergraduate, but that's sort of what the typical NYU undergraduate parks at. Now, as an aside, let me remind you that that's a 600% interest rate. So when they take 35 and say, forget it, they're turning down, you know, a 500% annual interest rate. That's pretty neat. So this goes to one of the questions that came up earlier. That is a bad behavior, and we probably evolved it because we lived in a perishable food world. We didn't have money, which was basically a non-perishable good. And so money really calls for a really different discount rate. It actually calls for the U.S. T-bill rate, which is 5%. And anything above that you take, and anything below that you reject. And that's something you can teach people, but that seems not to be a standard feature of human decision-making. Now, the way the dopamine neurons do this is a source of some debate. And so I'll tell you what I think I'm sort of reading the tea leaves of a bunch of related experiments. If you do the experiment I just described with monkeys, now, actually, Kenway Louie, the guy with the fantastic hairdo, Kenway actually did one of those experiments, one of the really famous ones in monkeys. What Kenway did was he asked his monkeys, which would you rather have, a milliliter of juice now, or 2, 3, 4 milliliters of juice in 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 seconds. So it's exactly the same thing, but on a sort of shorter time scale. And what he was able to show was that different monkeys differ in how patient they are, and their representation of how good the juice offer was in the brain circuits I was sort of showing you a cartoon of correctly reveal what the monkey thinks about those offers. And when we studied the dopamine neurons, now this was not done by my lab, but by a different one, in those same kinds of tasks, here's what you find. Suddenly you make the monkey an offer. Would you like 5 milliliters of juice in, let's say, 60 seconds? And at that moment, when you make that offer, you get a burst of activity which is not 5 milliliters of juice, but a lot less. And that how much less depends on how long. It's like the longer you wait, the more you squish down that response. But that makes sense because it's kind of less desirable. You have to wait for it. But here's the neat thing. When you give them the juice at the end, the missing part of the dopamine response appears suddenly in the dopamine neurons. So if a 5-milliliter burst produces this much dopamine, I don't know what this is, this much dopamine, but you say to the monkey, you have to wait 60 seconds for it, this is what you see. And then 60 seconds later, when the juice appears, this much dopamine gets released. So what we think is that the dopamine neurons are taking into account how long you're going to have to wait. Now, this would actually screw up the learning algorithm if they didn't sort of correct for how much they actually got. So they give this sort of subjective response, and then they sort of objectively re-update it at the end to correct for the sort of their own bias once they receive their reward. But this is kind of, we're not exactly sure if that's the right explanation for what's going on. We definitely know that dopamine neurons are sensitive to the delay, that they correct for it at the end by adding more dopamine, and that the response that they give you correctly predicts that individual's time preferences, that individual's impulsiveness or patience. So we're sort of rooting out that story, but I think it's going to come out real solid in the next couple of years. That's a great question. So This is a source of really interesting debate. So ask any economist, except me, and you say, well, what's the difference in interpretable choice between humans and animals? And they say, oh, animals, they're so immediate. They only care about the here and now. You say, well, what about 60 seconds? I say, oh, 60 seconds, Glimcher, give me a break. Now, these guys don't have any, you know, traditional evolutionary biology training. Okay, and you say, well, what about humans? And they say, well, humans, they plan for the future. They really know about the future. And that's a feature of how cool we are, or how big our brains are, or how much we weigh, or how much carbon we consume, or something. So first off, let's see if that's really true. Take a bunch of humans into the lab, and instead of having them make decisions about money, have them make decisions about beriberi fruit juice. Now, humans don't like beriberi fruit juice so much, so when we did this on ourselves, we went 14 hours without water, which makes beriberi fruit juice fantastic. And we sat down and we did the exact same monkey experiments. And we asked, which would you rather have, a milliliter of beriberi? We scaled it to our body sizes. But so it's like 4 milliliters of beriberi fruit juice now, or 20 milliliters, which is a pretty good amount, in 60 seconds. And we worked out the impulsiveness curves for the humans. And to my lab's fantastic delight, I am slightly more impulsive than our most impulsive monkey. And most of my postdoctoral fellows are just a little bit more patient than most of the monkeys. But to within sort of the error of the functions, if we're talking about juice, everybody's the same in the primates that have been tested, so that's kind of neat. Now, we can't ask the monkeys about money, or we probably can't ask the monkeys about money. People are starting to mess around with whether you can do that. Now, I might then respond, though, geez, there are lots of animal species that really do care about the long term. And what you should think immediately about is food-storing birds. Now, these are birds that they go, they find a nut, and or a little seed, and they have to say, oh, well, am I going to eat the seed now? Or am I going to bury it for 7 months from now, for 9 months from now, when the snow's on the ground? And so I've often said to my economist friends, you know, I'm sure the discount functions for those birds, for seeds, approximate human discount functions for money. Should I go measure that to prove to you that you're a doof? And my economist friends always say, oh, come on, they're birds. Now, I'm not exactly sure why that's a killing comment, because it seems like they are still animals. But I think the problem is that birds don't have a big, meaty cortex on top of their heads. And so economists are kind of not willing to put them in the same category as the monkeys and me. And so we actually never did that very time-consuming experiment of working out the discount functions of the birds, which I think would prove that they treat seeds as money. But I kind of got the impression that you either already believe that or you don't, and that experiment's not going to convince anyone. So don't do it. My advice to graduate students is do not do an experiment that will not convince anyone.